You know, I approached today with a little sickness going on here.
Okay, but actually, full disclosure, you've been coughing like crazy and it's driving me nuts because you won't go to the doctor.
Right.
I sound like your wife, but it's like, don't just go to, or like get on something. You've just been coughing like crazy. Allergies.
So I don't think we have a cough button, but I will try. So have you ever had affluenza? Have you ever suffered from affluenza?
Are you, influenza?
No, like the, affluenza. Have you ever, A-F-luenza.
I don't think I know what that is. What is that?
It is a, it's a crime theory brought up by a defense attorney in a case that, I think it was back in 2013, where a kid ran into a group of kids and tragically killed a bunch of them. And
wait, with his car?
With his car,
them? Oh, okay.
He was driving his car recklessly and ran into a group of individuals and killed several of them. And he was arrested for it. He was taken to court for it. And
makes sense.
And I think this was back in 2013, 16 years old. Here it is. Crashed into a group of people helping another stranded motorist.
Okay.
Reportedly, blood alcohol level pretty high. Might have had Valium in his system.
Oh my gosh.
And his defense attorney, which I never heard of before, said that he suffered from affluenza.
I don't know. I literally don't know. Well, is that even a real term?
Well, it was a term that the jury believed enough to say. It's basically saying, and I get the term that he used here, is that he said that he was so privileged and had so much money. Yes.
I shouldn't laugh. Wait, no.
Yeah. So basically, the defense expert, who was an expert, testified in court.
That's not real. That, I need to look at this.
No, take a peek. That
he suffered from affluenza.
Essentially arguing he was so wealthy and privileged that his parents never taught him consequences or boundaries, and so he should not be held accountable.
Was he not?
Well, he was given probation and therapy. And treatment. So apparently, affluenza is a term that people can use for a defense. I'm so wealthy and rich and so privileged that I was never taught how to be accountable.
That's absolutely insane to me. That's crazy. I mean, it fits really nicely into what we're going to talk about, which is a coined term phrase, maybe, that I came up with actually during my radio show that I do. Weightless consequences, which... It came up because of a Connecticut case that we were looking at, and that. So he went to therapy. Wait, what happened to him? He went to probation. He had probation.
He had probation.
I have to understand this. This is crazy.
So he had probation.
And he went to therapy.
Therapy and
treatment.
And treatment. Yes.
Got it. So kids died. Sorry to say it so bluntly, and he is on probation. Mm-hmm. So don't break another law. We're going to put you in therapy because obviously we need to work through this and maybe some treatment, whatever that may be, maybe mental health, something like that.
Yeah, and it basically, that case touches on a lot of wealth, obviously, and disparity in that, but also sentencing guidelines and discretion and, you know, whether privilege changes outcomes. But it ultimately comes down to your term that you developed on your radio show, which is so important. And talks about the consequences. And your term of weightless consequences, I think, is genius because it really does kind of highlight the fact that, I don't know, you're arrested, but are you being held accountable?
It's a slap on the wrist.
It is.
I mean, that's insane. So you're going to tell however many kids, and I don't know this case very well, Gary, so you would probably know that a little bit better. But in this case, I don't know how many kids died as a result of this accident.
Four kids died.
Okay, so you're going to tell those four families, don't worry. He's on probation. You make that face, but it's true. How do you even look them in the face and say, and I get it. I understand that it's beyond obviously my pay grade. So I know the justice system is, you know, very complicated. I understand, you know, the whole innocent until proven guilty. I understand, you know, I don't know what was in this courtroom. But my point being is logistically, you could tell a 4 or 5 year old, hey, if you hit somebody with your car and they perish from it, you are going to face consequences. How can you logically say that it's okay to just give probation and some therapy? That's like a weightless consequence. That's crazy to me.
And doesn't it plays into what we talked about last show?
I think it was last week, yeah.
Yeah, about the mom
where are parents
held accountable,
right?
They were being held accountable. Now it'd be interesting to see what the consequences are for her arrest and the actions, but
right.
You know, it's funny because it all starts with the case. Well, it all starts with a complaint. and we'll get to the specifics of which case really brought this up. It starts with a complaint, then an investigation, then an arrest, if an arrest is valid or mm-hmm. there's probable cause, to court, to consequences. And it's a journey that a lot of people don't take from beginning to end, like totally. Birth to death. Sometimes they don't follow it all the way and they don't really understand it all the time. So if you stick with it, then you start to go back. Now we can go back in the case that we're going to refer to and look at, well, wait a minute, all of this was true.
Right. Well, and I think that's where you could also be a very key player in this, Gary, because sometimes I know I can have kind of, my parents will say sometimes I'm very black and white, although I would like to argue that I sometimes have a lot of gray in me, but I will see some things, and when I say it, it kind of seems like I'm generalizing, but obviously this isn't for every single case, because there are a lot of cases where justice is served, and you have consequences that match the actions, or sometimes there's really too heavy of a consequence for actions that are like, I'm not sure. So this is kind of I'm not trying to blanket it. But when you read cases like this, or the one that we're going to talk about here in Connecticut, to me, I don't know how you can look at that as not a weightless consequence. And there's a part of it, too, that I don't think people realize there's not a lot of weight to it, but it sounds like there is. That's what makes it weightless.
That's exactly right.
That's what it is, because it sounds really bad on the surface, but then I'm like, is it, though?
Yeah.
So here's the case that we were talking about on my regular weekday morning show that I do. And Gary popped on the air, and honestly, we had so many people emailing and calling about this. They're like, we need you to do a deeper dive. So we decided to do that for this show. So here in Connecticut, there's a town called Bethany. Ironically, Gary lives there. He has nothing to do with this case.
Yeah, I have to live somewhere, and that's where I chose to live.
That's a true statement. You did. You did. And he has a beautiful home, by the way. So anyways, a Bethany man pleaded guilty earlier this month to sexually abusing girls in the town-run after-school program and summer camp where he had been working. He accepted a plea deal that will have him serving 4 years in prison with 20 years suspended. Okay, he's a 26-year-old. And it says he could have faced up to 75 years in prison for 5 separate cases of sexual assault and risk of injury to a child. How did he get 4 years in prison? Well, here's the plea deal. Ready for this one, guys? So 4 years in incarceration. Fine. The agreement includes a lifetime restraining order that bars him from contacting the victims and 10 years of sex offender probation. It also says he would have therapeutic treatment. Love that. I don't mean to be such a jerk about it, but wait, we'll get to it. He also has to register as a sex offender once he is released from prison. Okay, there are two things in there, Gary, that I want the honest truth from you. And feel free, law enforcement, put that hat on and tell me where I'm right or I'm wrong or maybe in the middle. The idea of a restraining order drives me insane because that is a piece of paper. That is literally what it is. And the sex offender registry, yes, bad reputation and you're there, but only if people are actually checking that. So if you want to get a job, for example, I do understand that. But nobody on average is checking the sex offender registry to see if their neighbors or people they know are on there. Those are weightless consequences. They sound horrible. Restraining order, sex offender registry. You're laughing, but it's true. That's, to me, those are weightless consequences.
Well, yeah. I mean, people think that a guilty plea, because this is what he did, is, you know, it's going to lead to something really bad. And in this case, a lot of people have pushed back, and I know you've got a lot of emails on it, and have said this is kind of ridiculous.
It kind of is.
But it does. It's those added things that go to it. It's like, well, you know, you're on this list, or you're not allowed to contact the person. First of all, so let's talk about the first one, the restraining order. We know that a restraining order is a piece of paper, and that is sometimes one of the consequences that we can say, but it really carries no weight. It doesn't protect anybody. It starts the process to understand that there's a problem.
Right.
But
you're on the radar.
Yeah. But it's not going to do much. And the lifetime protective order or restraining order, a lifetime restraining order, that means from now until eternity, this individual won't be contacting these victims.
Just the ones that came forward, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. And we don't know. We don't know whether there were more or not. We can only go under the assumption that there possibly were more. And the reason I can say that is, and I'm not saying there were, was because the amount of children that he had time and contact with.
Well, and the amount of families who complained and said nothing happened. Because going back to your original point, Gary, if you go back in time and you look at how long this case took to even get to this day, this was ignored for a while.
Yeah.
And then once you started to see people come forward and actually file complaints, formal complaints against him, it built up. That's all I'm saying.
No, it did. You're right. And so that's where, in the beginning when I talked about that. So we have a complaint that some people believed and some people didn't. We always should believe victims and conduct an investigation. People had a complaint. They had a complaint that it happened, but then also the complaints kept coming in because it wasn't handled.
And not to mention, he had similar complaints when he was working in the schools, which is why he was let go.
That's right. Yes, yes. And right. And then nothing was done. No consequences then, if you think about it.
No, just so let go from his
not
job.
Not even from a criminal perspective, but just in that regard. He's working at the school, there's a complaint, and he gets let go, and he moves into the park and rec department. So there's no consequences. There's nothing really happened to him.
Just
in
shuffled,
world.
That's all.
And he kept continuing to commit these acts. So we do the investigation. Now it comes back that he stood up and said, I'm guilty. That means he admits to doing what he was arrested for, which is huge. And sometimes, that's what I said at the beginning of this, that people don't oftentimes follow cases from birth to death.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complaint, they get mad about it, maybe an arrest, maybe they watch the trial a little bit, but now he pled guilty, and now they're like, thank God he pled guilty, he should be held accountable. And it's like, meh, 4 years, couple little pieces of paper, get on a website, register for the website. Okay, push back a little bit on this, and we're talking about countless weightless consequences
yeah.
That will air this Sunday.
But it does kind of happen countless times.
It does.
It does.
Thanks for,
right?
Thank,
See?
Thank you
I got
for the
you.
Save. You
Listen,
did that.
Listen, we're partners in crime after
and
all.
And they, so we're talking about weightless consequences, especially as it relates to crime, and the issue of that. And so let's go right to your specific things. The one thing you talked about was a restraining order. It is a consequence. It sets in stage that if he violates it, there can be another charge. It doesn't matter. There's nothing to it.
Well, so that's what I was going to ask. Like, from a law enforcement standpoint, when somebody comes to you and you file a restraining order, I mean, what is the difference between when you didn't have the order versus when you did? Really? Truly?
That sets, so a restraining order will set up a potential for a charge if they violate it.
But that's it. Like,
no,
you're not going to follow them.
No.
You're not going to follow up on that because you don't. That's not part of, like, under your jurisdiction. All it is like, yes, you have enough reason. Here's a warrant, a restraining order, and you have it. That's
right.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then if the person comes up and like, if you arrest them and you're like, oh, actually, we have it on file that there is a restraining order against you. That's the only time where it's, oh, yeah, you're on our radar. But
yeah,
all it
exactly
is that somebody just in their mind is like, okay, I have a sense of relief. But essentially, you have a piece of paper. I hate to say this, but there was a case, and I don't have it right in front of me, but where a mother of, I think she had two or three children? Two were at home, but three children, I think, in total.
Right.
I believe she was a mother of three.
Yep.
This was also in Connecticut a few years ago. And she was in a really awful relationship. And she had gone to the police, had shown hundreds, I think more than 1,000 text messages in a day that this person was harassing her, and she asked for a restraining order. She had a restraining order, I believe.
She did.
Yeah,
she did. She did.
Didn't matter.
No.
He went to her home. She died. He killed her. And her two children were at home. And I think to myself, again, on the surface, you're like, I did everything right. This woman did everything right. But it didn't matter. And that's where it drives me nuts that people even think the idea of, oh, but I got a restraining order, I'm good. No, that's not a shield. I don't think the average person realizes
no,
that.
No, and people, I think the people that have to ask for a restraining order, they kind of get it. Because mm-hmm. we, as police officers, that's what we'll tell people to do. We will tell people, get a restraining order.
Right.
Because if someone's bothering you to that point, you have to get a restraining order.
And to be fair, this sounds crazy, but I know from my news days, Gary, I believe I called you about this years ago when I worked in television. There was somebody who continued to follow me after stories, would call from strange numbers. I was like 23, 24 years old, and I had asked for a restraining order, and it scared him. Never heard from him again.
Right,
I have no idea who he is, but it did. So it does, it can be effective. The idea of if you're taking legal action or the police are on to you, it's not to say that there is no place for it, but I think when you're telling these five victims that this man has a piece of paper saying he cannot come near you,
right?
To give them a thumbs up, I don't think that makes them feel justice.
Melissa just gave that.
I just gave a very sarcastic thumbs up.
That's right.
Yes, I did.
So restraining orders are effective only in the sense that they are a tool. And in your case, once the individual said realized they had a restraining order, I'm not coming near you.
Right.
This is different and goes towards this weightless consequences because he's already admitted to it. So it's like, oh, okay, let's give you the 4 years and we'll throw in these a la carte things that'll just kind of make it or pump
seem
it up
like
a little
it's
bit more.
Well, especially right. because statistics, we were talking about this, I don't know, Gary, either on one of my shows or just a conversation, because this is all we do is talk about crime. But there was a statistic talking about the likelihood of somebody who is a commits a sexual crime against somebody, the likelihood that they will go back to that same person
right.
again after they've already been addressed or they have been convicted or even if they've been accused of it is so low. The idea of them going back to that same person once they've been caught is so low. So even the idea of, okay, you've got a restraining order against these five people,
yeah.
I mean, maybe it gives them a sense of relief, but I, again, I'm
yeah,
giving a some, thumbs up because I don't think so.
No, well, some of the restraining orders that we deal with are there's an emotional attachment there as well.
Okay.
So that always, well, that's why we see it in divorces and domestic violence, is that the restraining order isn't going to do much.
I'm not talking about a relationship.
I know. No, I know that.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I 100% get that. So what we're talking about is an individual, an offender, admitted to offending kids, and now the judge says, well, you can never contact them forever. Well, yeah, of course not. We
of
don't
course
want
not.
Them
He's,
ever to do that.
Why
right?
would he? Right.
That kind of is like, well, it's just weightless. Let's just throw that on there to begin with. It doesn't serve him any more jail time. He gets out still on time. It's just you can never talk to these kids or have any contact with them. The second one being the sex offender registry. Now, if we go back, because that was the other part of the charge of this individual in Bethany, Connecticut, who was a teacher. He was a teacher,
then became a camp counselor. Yeah, because I think I've told this story I don't know how many times. But yeah, he was a teacher, or he worked in the schools. I don't actually know what he did at the schools. He was fired from the schools, and then he was very quickly kind of shuffled into the town-run camps where he was a counselor.
Right.
And he had a lot of contact with children, and there's all these accounts of what the children told their parents about it. I mean, it's awful. It's disgusting. It's horrible. He just... had a plea deal in court earlier in May, and what he has now agreed to is 4 years behind bars. He has a lifetime restraining order that keeps him from contacting the five victims in this case, 10 years of sex offender probation, which is a restrictive form of probation requiring therapeutic treatment, but also when he is released from prison, he has to register as a sex offender.
Yeah, so...
We're talking about weightless consequences,
right.
by the way. Which means exactly. that you basically got a slap on the wrist in some regard. And again, the reason this infuriates me is because I do think the news side of me, it drives me crazy when you see headlines like guilty plea, sex offender. Like, it uses all these big trigger words, but when you really dive into it, I don't know how much justice the victims or people who are just living and finding out this story are going to feel about a person like this.
Well, cops and reporters feel the same way, because if you look at it from a police perspective, they have to interview these kids. There's services that have to be provided to them. They're hearing the details. They're doing the investigation. They're applying for the arrest warrants.
Mm-hmm.
They make the arrest. The individual goes to court, in this case goes to court, pleads guilty, and gets 4 years in prison.
Right.
Nah.
Well, and what's so interesting from a law enforcement standpoint, here's where we differ, is once you've done your job, you've arrested them, you've put the whole case together, you actually are then kind of taken out of the equation, unless you have to go on the stand or something like that.
That's right.
You actually are done with it. You almost have to be like, case closed, moving on. Whereas here's where I get to, I think, have a little bit more in this regard, is I get to dig into this and really outline stuff and... You don't get to do that. I feel
you guys have to
move on from it.
Yeah,
whereas we get to...
Yeah, cops would move on to do another investigation. But the time that it really comes to light in police officers with the weightless consequences is repeat offenders.
Fair.
Because
that's fair.
They
yep.
arrest somebody. So let's take a burglary squad. If
okay.
those are a burglary group that are doing investigations, so an individual can commit 10, 20, 30 burglaries before they ever get arrested. I don't know statistically what it is, but rarely does somebody commit one burglary in a house, meaning that they go into a house, break into the house, take things and leave, a burglary, and the first time they do it, they get caught.
Right.
It's generally that they
right, you've got to get a pattern.
Of,
you've got to have people
correct,
who caught it. Yeah,
correct.
Sure.
So investigators will look for those patterns. They'll try to identify who the individual is, do an investigation, maybe hold them accountable for five burglaries. They go to court. They get probation, weightless consequences for these five houses. And then a week later, 2 weeks later, 6 weeks later, a month later, whatever, they are now committing those same crimes. Or they're seeing that same pattern, which leads you to believe, okay, this could be that guy because we just put him in and that's the same pattern. That's where it starts to frustrate law enforcement mm-hmm. because we're putting forth all the effort to make these arrests to keep our community safe and the consequences are weightless.
Right, we're really not making it so that they wouldn't offend again. By the way, I meant to ask you this, and this is probably a really dumb question, but so many times we see probation right. and we're all just on average, and here's the thing, somebody listening right now or watching right now might be like, is she an idiot? Maybe, that's fine. But what even... When we say probation, I know what the concept is of probation, but I mean, to me, that is even weightless. When you hear that he is in a restrictive form of probation that requires therapeutic treatment, so you're in therapy? Like, what? Yeah. To me, even when you hear about probation, like, oh, you're going to be serving this many years with probation. Where is it? Where is it? He is doing 4 years in prison with 20 years suspended. Like, what does that even mean? Including probation. So to me, I feel like it's kind of like, you know, there's a risk. There's a chance that you will have to do more time if you break probation. But
well,
who's
yeah.
doing that?
So if you put somebody on probation, sometimes right. you will put somebody on probation because you don't want them to continue to carry out the acts that they were doing.
Right.
Okay.
But do they care about that?
No, because they're
right.
not going to jail.
Correct.
Exactly.
Ding, ding.
I don't have to go to jail.
I'm
on probation.
That's what I'm saying. So when they right. say probation, I think it's the dumbest thing.
Well,
it's
what probation will do is, it's in other words, it's like you were bad, but we're going to set these guidelines for you.
Great.
So it's similar like if you were a kid that got in trouble and they would ground you. Well, we're not going to ground you. So it's like, oh my gosh, thank God I'm not grounded. But you have to be home by 9 o'clock.
Right.
You can't use the phone.
Oh, so you still have a life.
Oh,
fantastic. So people right. suffered, but you know what?
That's the probation.
That's a weightless consequence.
And if you come home after 9 o'clock,
you might
then you are
to.
Grounded.
Right, right.
That's what this is. It's the probation is the term set forth by saying, look, we're going to let you out after 4 years.
But how many times, Gary, do we hear that where it's like you're going to prison for 5 years, but you've got 20 years probation. I can't stand that.
Yeah, well, I can't stand that. Worse than that is it is when they violate the probation. Mm-hmm. So it should be like if your parents said to you, or my parents said to me, I'm not going to ground you, but these are the guidelines you got to follow. And then if I break one of those rules, then they still don't ground me.
Right.
Then
right.
it's kind of like, well, now you're on double
exactly.
probation. You're just
but this
continuing.
Is the stuff they don't think about.
It is the weightless consequences of everything that we do, and we're right. talking about it here.
Right. And so the other weightless consequence in here, because I want to make sure we get to it, because this mm-hmm. one drives me crazy too, is registering as a sex offender. And I think that is such a buzz phrase, and I hate to say that, but it's true. Because Gary said on my show, which is so true, he's like, well, and there's a place for it. There is a place
yeah,
for
yeah.
it because he made a great point. You know, you want to know, for example, that your kid's bus driver is not on the sex offender
right.
registry. No question. Or you were saying what? If you're going trick or treating, you want to know which
yeah,
neighbors.
Which houses not to go to if you're trick or treating. Correct.
Okay. Who out there, a show of hands, obviously I can't see any of you, is checking the sex offender registry to make sure your kids are not trick or treating at a house that could be dangerous?
Well, I don't know. I know I did.
You're a cop.
Well, I know.
You are different than most. Here's the thing. I'm a reporter. I go out with my son.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
But I don't check which houses are dangerous.
So what
no,
the what the sexual offender registry really was designed to do, in my opinion, was to, because we know that sex offenders oftentimes are repeat offenders. And we have to have some way of putting people on notice that they exist. And where they are in neighborhoods. And it probably was because, and I'm speculating here, but I would imagine what happens, somebody gets arrested for a sex violation, they go to jail, they get out of jail, and they commit again, and then the neighborhood or somebody rallies up and says, we didn't even know this individual was living within our midst.
Right.
So let's make sure that there's some sort of a resource that people can go to find out who are the sex offenders in their neighborhood.
So funny enough, one of the emails we got after you brought this up on the show, Gary, was somebody who said, hey, remember when you talked about sleepovers? They actually checked the sex. This was somebody who their children are grown now. They would check the sex offender registry because they didn't know both spouses in the house.
Yeah, see, that's once you understand it.
I was like, wow, that is beyond. My mom just wouldn't let us sleep over.
Well, that's why you got to go back and listen to that one
yeah.
in the first place. But once you realize how easy it is to go on any state website, because I know other states have a sex offender list.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know how easy it is, you type in your address and it'll tell you the sex offenders in your area. So it's something to, it's something
a tool.
There. It is a consequence. But it's weightless in the sense of I'm not going to jail. You can
right.
put me on any list you want. They're going to have difficulty getting a job. They're not certainly going to get jobs where it relates to kids, although that's probably part of his probation anyway. But yeah, you're on a list. The bottom line is the consequences of criminal acts are jail, really. And if people can avoid jail or minimize jail, they're just happy. I'm not going to jail. You can put me on probation for a billion years.
Right.
You can put me on a lifetime. I will never be able to talk to the people that I hurt for eternity. I don't really care as long as I'm only doing 4 years in jail. I'll get out.
But that's what I mean. I mean, how do you, again, if you go back to that 2013 case, how do you tell the families who had to bury children, okay, he's on probation, or okay, he's in therapy? How do you tell these little girls who are going to grow up one day and they have to try to figure out how to even trust somebody to marry and then raise their children and deal with that? How do you tell them that, okay, but he's never going to contact you because you have a piece of paper? Weightless consequences.
Yeah, we could all at times use a little more weight in our consequences.
Just a tad. I think as people in this, after this case out of Bethany, it did make me say, oh, okay, I guess I will use that tool a little bit more and look things up, which I can. But again, I think we as a society have to also see that this is totally inexcusable. And even though you have a list of six things versus just one that says you're going to prison for 75 years, one list is different than one item. That's all I'm saying.
Pleading guilty or being found guilty is a little different than the amount of time you spend in jail and the consequences you face. Just always have to remember that.